Hi, everyone, and welcome to The Inner Athlete. I'm your host, James Jankowicz, and I want to thank you guys for tuning in and joining us this evening. This show is all about giving you lots of good quality information so you can become a more fit, a more healthy, a more well individual. That's at the core of what we're doing here. So, as usual, this evening we have a lot of new updated information to share with you and some interesting commentary as well. This is the first show I've been back for in a while. I was out for about 3 weeks doing a little traveling, a little working, a little relaxation, and just on a little hiatus, but I'm back. So hope you guys have been well. I certainly have, and we'll get on with the show right after this. Stay tuned, and don't forget to visit us at innerathletetraining.com, innerathletetraining.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone, to The Inner Athlete. I'm your host, James Jankowicz, and again, don't forget to visit us at our website, innerathletetraining.com. And like I said before, I was away for a couple weeks, and one of the things I was doing with the time was I visited the HOT conference. Most of you have heard about this if you've visited the website, The Hour of the Time, and it was a really great conference. There were a lot of great speakers, a lot of very, very interesting topics. Everything from how to make your own herbs and your own home medical remedies to John Daniels was there speaking on his book, Scarlet and the Beast, and a whole bunch of other people speaking on lots of different topics, did everything from botany and plants and to building outdoor survival shelters and things like that. So it was really very productive. And it was all the way up in the northeast mountains of Arizona, and it was just absolutely positively beautiful out there. It's really, really beautiful. It's very tranquil. The nights are just as gorgeous as can possibly be. Horses just roaming around by themselves, and just a lots of just really beautiful, beautiful scenery. Lots of great fresh air. It's about 9,000 feet above sea level, so that took a little while to get used to, because I'm a East Coaster down here in New York City, so put me 9,000 feet above sea level, and you know, my body's reacting. But it was just a really great time of lectures and very interactive workshops, and if you haven't attended one of those in the past, I highly recommend you look into going next year for the 2009 Skills and Research Conference. Again, that's the Hour of the Time Skills and Research Conference that they have annually. And I think it had been 2 years since I've been there. Last time I was there, I had just finished the documentary that I wrote and produced on William Cooper. And that was, I had a showing up there, preliminary showing, before we had the release of the film. So that went, that's the last time I was there. So it was about 2 years ago. So it was nice to be back. And then I also taught there as well. I was shooting a lot of the conference. For those of you who don't know, I also have a small independent video production company on the side. Used to do that full time, and now I just do it on the side. And so I did a lot of shooting, and then I myself participated in providing a workshop. I did a 4-hour self-defense workshop. So there was really, really no limit as to the volume and diversity of information that was presented at that workshop. And every year they seem to be getting better and better. So I highly recommend, if you have the time and the wherewithal, to get out to Eager, Arizona next year for the 2009 conference. You won't be disappointed. And, you know, there's nothing militant out there. If you don't want to participate in any of the workshops, you certainly don't have to. In fact, that was one of the things I was telling them. It's like, we should just have a day or at least a half day now and then where people can just do whatever they want, because if there was any downside to it, it was too much information. It was too much stuff going on, and it would have been nice just to take a little breather here and there. But to say that that's the only downside of it is saying it was, you know, a really, really great workshop. So, again, I highly recommend you guys. You can check it out at the Hour of the Time, or hourofthetime.com, and I think they'll be scheduling the next workshop, certainly by January the latest, I believe, for next year. And I believe it'll be in the fall, again, sometime in September or October. So it was nice to get out there. It was nice to be on the West Coast, and then I drove down to L.A. to visit some friends for a little while, and that was really nice, too. So, but anyway, I'm back, and back to give you guys and share with you guys all sorts of great, 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 great information on how to become a healthier person, and that's what this show's all about. And for those of you who haven't tuned in yet, that, you know, this show, it's called The Inner Athlete, and that's essentially what we play to on this program, is this whole idea of the inner athlete. Everybody has it in them. Everybody has, you know, whether you're a fully developed athlete because you've practiced a lot, or whether you are just a simply a weekend warrior who enjoys playing softball, basketball, or whatever once a week or once on the weekends, you know, this show is for you because it's really packed with a lot of information you can use, both professionally and recreationally. It's all about staying hydrated. It's all about staying warm. It's all about how to condition and train your body. And most importantly, it's all about having the heart of the athlete, the heart of the inner athlete. And that's to say that it's all about nurturing that part of you that really ascends to its highest self. When you're in competition and you're playing by the rules of the game and you're playing fair and you're playing well and you've practiced hard and all those great and noble things that come as a result of participating in something athletic, that really tends to pull a lot out of us. And we come out the other end, you know, a wiser and much stronger person. So it's just as much about the mind, it's just as much about the spirit, just as much about the heart on this program as it is about the physical application. Because everybody's got that inner athlete in them. And I don't care if you've never played a sport in your entire life. If you walk upstairs every day, you're technically doing something athletic. It's not very advanced, but you're still doing something. So that's the big idea here, you know, to drive this point home, is that everybody has it in them to be an athlete on whatever level, and that there's just a heck of a lot of joy you can get out of it just by moving your body, exposing it to the fresh air, eating well, eating healthy. And I can't tell you, for the many years that I've been in this industry, which is going on 20 now, I can't tell you how many conditions I've seen reverse just with the basics. And we're talking about everything from atherosclerosis, high cholesterol, hypertension, arthritis. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on and on, because there's really no one condition where exercise is contraindicated for anything. There may be states. You may have just be getting over a cold. You might have just gotten chemotherapy. There might be short periods of time where it wouldn't be appropriate to exercise, but somewhere in the healing process, somewhere along the line, it will be appropriate and advantageous to exercise. So there's really no downside to it. You have over 200 joints in the body. The body was designed to move, and you need to move. You just need to move to keep yourself healthy. And when I see, for the years that I've been doing this, when I see the people who've just made the basic changes. I mean, we're not talking about even anything dramatic. We're just talking about people who have changed their diet. You know, they cut out most, if not all, of the dairy, the highly processed sugar, and just started exercising. You know, just started doing, just started with walking and then eventually to jogging and then finding something they really enjoy, whether it was biking, rowing, rock climbing. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all what you're doing as long as you're out doing something. And again, I emphasize, I can't tell you how many conditions I've seen reverse themselves, and I can't tell you how many people I've seen just become much healthier people just by doing the basics. So to a large extent, that's what the show is about too. It's all about going back to basics. And in fact, I have a DVD series coming out that we're just finishing post-production on now that's called just that. It's called the Inner Athlete Back to Basics series. And this series just emphasizes this whole idea that it's not about fancy machines. You don't even have to have a gym membership. You know, it's just really just getting your body moving, getting your lymphatic system stimulated, your circulatory system stimulated, stimulating your muscles so they can grow, sweating, because the skin is the number one largest organ on the body. And it often reflects what's going on the inside of the body. So the more you are active, the more you're circulating, the more you're sweating, and quite frankly, not to be gross, but the more you're crapping and the more you're urinating and the more you're sweating, basically the cleaner and the healthier you are. You know, top that off with getting quality sleep and eating quality food, and you know, you're talking about a roadmap for a very healthy, dynamic, and vital life. And it's nothing that costs money. And that's the interesting thing. See, it's weird because we have the medical model completely reversed in this country. We let people do whatever they want, and we insure them. And then if they wind up getting $100,000 bypass surgery, then the insurance company comes in and pays for that. Instead, what they should be doing is the insurance company should be subsidizing all the wellness components. They should be subsidizing the gym memberships. They should be subsidizing the purchasing of supplements, the purchasing of herbs, the purchasing of organic produce. If they're going to subsidize something, that's where you start. And then if you choose to smoke, if you choose to be inactive, if you choose to be obese, and you wind up having some sort of surgery that's a direct result of your lifestyle, then you pay for it. It shouldn't have to come out of our pockets, per se. You know, your health is really one of your truly existential responsibilities. And if you're not taking care of it, and you're uninsured, and then we wind up paying the bill for it, it just ain't right. So I urge you all, one and all, to just really go out and get a handle on it. You know, if you're new to this game, that's what the show is all about, and there's no lack of resources out there to learn how to become healthy and become well. This is just one of tens of thousands. But you really need to take control of your life, because nobody wants to wind up with heart disease. Nobody wants to wind up with cancer. Nobody wants to wind up being immobile. Nobody. These are just, it's an awful way to wind up. And there are always going to be things that we can't help. There will always be accidents. There will always be something that will put us behind the eight ball. But so many, you know, 10 out of 10 of our diseases in this country, in this civilized country, that take us out are preventable. And they are directly the result of lifestyle choices. So you really need to consider that, and you really need to get on the ball if you haven't, and you just really need to take responsibility for your health. Because if there's one thing, especially being out there in the Skills and Research Conference, you know, a lot of what the course matter had to do with is emergencies. Now, what if there was some sort of national emergency? What if the power grid did go out? What if a storm did take out, you know, a large portion of our country? What if, you know, there was an invasion? What if any number of things happened? You know, are you prepared? Are you going to survive it? You know, and being healthy and being well and being able to walk as many miles or run as many miles as you need to is a vital, vital part of all that. And I know, I was right there on ground zero, 9/11. I had to walk 13 miles to get back to even get in the vicinity of where I lived, and then I had to have somebody pick me up from there. So what if I had not been conditioned? Would I have been able to make that walk? What if I had not been prepared? So these are things you just need to consider. You know, we walk around and we assume that tomorrow is going to be exactly like the day before. And hopefully, it's my prayer and my wish that it will be. But this is life, and you never know what kind of curveballs it's going to throw at you. And the healthier you are, the less you're going to have to worry about that. You know, the less you're going to have to worry about that. You know, you may have to weather a storm, you know, and then start building your house from scratch again, or move out so you can avoid a storm, or avoid any kind of cataclysmic event that may be happening. And I tell you, the healthier you are, the easier that's going to be. And like I said before, it does not take any money. It doesn't take any profound knowledge. All it really takes is your desire, a little bit of willpower, and some discipline, and you could do it. And the thing is, you'll never regret it. You'll always be healthier for it, and you'll always feel better for it. I mean, after all, who doesn't want a body that's lean, that's supple, that's flexible, that's strong? You know, these are all, and these are not attributes of elite athletes. Right? I mean, these are not things that only elite Olympic athletes can attain. This is stuff we all can attain on whatever level we can. So it starts exactly where you're at. It starts right where you're at, and then it goes into progressions from there. You take something, example, I was just giving a workshop the other day in New York, and It just came up, you know, because people, especially now, because the economy is so in the crapper, and I work down the Wall Street area, and I see it. I see it firsthand, the toll it's taking on everybody. I know I did a program about this just before I left, about economics and its relationship to fitness, and I recommend you listening to that show if you haven't heard it. It's very interesting, the studies that I found in the relationships. But the point is, there's this pure phenomenon going on where people just feel like, well, you know, I got this job, I need this job, so it doesn't necessarily look good if I'm going to go to lunch, or if I'm going to go to the gym, or if I'm going to take time for myself to exercise. You know, which is really a misnomer, because if there's any time you need to exercise, if there's any time you need to expel stress, this is it. You know, if you're one of the many industries that's being hit by this economic tsunami that's occurring right now, certainly if you're in the financial industry, you're taking a big hit. It's over 40,000 jobs lost in the financial industry. And I know there are a lot of people on Main Street saying, well, good for them. But there's also a lot of other industries that are just taking this hit. A lot of them. Not all of them. Not everybody's, you know, there are going to be a number of industries, a number of people who are just going to fly under this radar, and, you know, they'll get through this relatively unscathed, but there's a lot of people hurting out there right now. So now more than ever, this is the time to really take the bull by the horns. If you are unemployed, if you have been laid off and you do have the time, then you need to take some of that time and start focusing on this stuff if you haven't already. Because the more physically fit you are, the more mental clarity you're going to have, the better you're going to feel about yourself, essentially. And that is such a crucial, crucial component, especially in these days. Some of you out there have very physical jobs, and that is enough for a lot of people. You know, if you're out there building, or you're digging, and you're actively engaged and physically in what you do day to day, then you've killed two birds with one stone. You know, you're working and you're being fit, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if your job is sedentary, and you know that you've been slacking, this is truly just a wake-up call. You need to get this part of your life really, really in order, because you know what? If this fails, down goes everything else. If your health doesn't sustain itself, then what's the point? Your days are going to be long and painful. You're going to not have a quality of life as if you were otherwise healthy. So whatever it is you're doing, if you are working out now, fine. If you're not, this is, but I'm really speaking to the people who are not, for the people who've been putting it off, to the people now especially who are stressed, like super stressed because of what's going on with the economy, you need to do this. You need to take the bull by the horns and you need to start training. And you will feel better. Because net-net, what the exercise does, it essentially burns off stress. So you're sitting all day and you're, shoulders are slouched and you're getting carpal tunnel syndrome and all this tension just builds up and, you know, guess where you hold it? You hold it in your muscles, right? You're going to sit there, you're under stress, you're going to start squeezing. Whether you're squeezing your calves, whether you're squeezing your back, whether you're squeezing, I mean, you should be squeezing your abs. I mean, if you're going to squeeze any part of your body, that's probably the best part to squeeze. But without going out and expressing and venting and burning off that stress, that's just going to continue to accumulate. And then you're going to find out one day you're going to, you know, wind up really in a bad way because you just have all this net accumulated stress. Now top that off with the fact that you're under all this stress, and because you're under stress, now you're making poor food choices. So now you're eating like crap, you're not feeling all that good, you put on a couple pounds, you're carrying all this tension around, and guess what? That can all be different. You could reverse that. You could start reversing that tomorrow. You could wake up tomorrow and that can all be different. Those lower back pains, the knee pains, the things that you've been living with, you know, that extra poundage you've been carrying around, you just have to make a choice, folks. And you just have to commit to it. And there's nobody that can do it for you. You know, you can hire a good trainer, and trainers are great. I'm one of them. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're just there to supervise, to counsel, to maybe cheerlead, to motivate, to educate. You know, a trainer is many, many different things. And a good trainer, a really good trainer, is someone who's between the knowledge that you know and winding up going to see your doctor for some sort of life-threatening condition. They're that intermediate part. So if you find a good trainer, that's great, but you know what? Even in their presence, you're still the one doing the work. You still got to do it yourself. If it helps you to have a buddy system, you know, find somebody that to go training or walking with you, just to have that sense of accountability. If you do want to hire a trainer, that also speaks to that sense of accountability. All that's fine, as long as you're doing it. Because when you've trained well and you're eating well, you'll wake up in the morning with a much fresher perspective. You'll wake up with a lot more energy. You'll wake up with a lot more gusto to get through the day. The crappy foods, the high sugary foods, the high dairy foods, all that stuff's ultimately going to weigh you down. So it's just real important to get out there, start exercising, start cleaning up your diet, start drinking a lot of clean water. And if you're under stress right now because of everything that's going on in the economy, you really need to do it now more than ever. This is it. You know, it doesn't even start tomorrow. It literally starts now. So anyway, that's a tirade I didn't even necessarily mean to get into right now. So I have a bunch of other reports sitting right in front of me that I wanted to get into, but I don't even know where the time went. I just sort of drifted into that lateral drift. So I tell you what we'll do is we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back and start getting into these other updates I wanted to enlighten you guys to. All right? The website is innerathletetraining.com, innerathletetraining.com. The radio show is called The Inner Athlete. And I'm your host, James Jankowicz. So stick with us, and we'll be right back after this.
It was on one fine March morning when I bid New Orleans adieu. And I was on the road to Jackson, down my fortune to renew. I cursed all foreign money. No credit could I gain, which filled my heart with longing.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to The Inner Athlete. I'm your host, James Jankowicz. So, wanted to just cover a couple basic things here that I felt were real important to share. This came across my mind as I was traveling, and I thought, I haven't mentioned this yet on the air, and this is really important. In fact, I had a good friend of mine who's a trainer who passed away from this particular condition about 4 years ago, 5 years ago almost. And he did a lot of weight training, but didn't do a whole lot of cardio and drank a whole lot of coffee. So, you never know what eventually is going to take you out, but those were two components that we discussed a lot. And I said, Dan, you should do more of that stuff. And with his Irish sense of humor, he just always looked me in the eye and say some sort of snide, funny remark that always had me laughing. But he's a great guy, and unfortunately he passed, but this is one of the this is what they assume he passed from. And what we're talking about is deep vein thrombosis, especially when it pertains to long plane flights. My buddy had just gotten back from Italy, and he was no small guy. I mean, he's very large, probably about 6 foot, 6 foot one, had to be 240 maybe even 250. So no small guy, but they believe this is what got him. I was speaking to him when he got back from his trip from Italy, and he was telling me all about it. And that evening, he went to get something to eat and died, and the paramedic said he was dead before he hit the floor. Just dropped dead that quickly. And that's why they assumed it was this particular condition, deep vein thrombosis. And basically what it is, it's referred to as DVT, deep vein thrombosis. It's a potentially life-threatening disorder. Actually, I'm reading the official statement on it from ACE, which is the American Council on Exercise. And it's a potentially life-threatening disorder in which blood clots from the deep veins of the body, particularly the legs, and has been growing in recent years after several cases were attributed to long flights. DVT can lead to a pulmonary embolism, and this is what eventually kills you, when a clot breaks free and lodges in a lung. If the clot is large enough, it can cause sudden death. Now, it can go up to the lung, or it can also go up to the brain. In an airplane, the dehydration caused by the dry air may thicken blood. In addition, the low cabin pressure combined with immobility and cramped seats may cause blood to collect in the legs. And as a result, DVT has been dubbed, quote, economy class syndrome. The potential for the problem is greater when in-flight airline personnel keep the seatbelt sign lit and discourage passengers from moving about the cabin due to air turbulence. It says, who is most susceptible? People with cancer, chronic heart or respiratory failure, or an inherited or acquired predisposition to clotting, obesity, or varicose veins. Also, among the list of the most susceptible are those who recently have had major surgeries, have been bedridden, or have suffered a blow to the leg. Women who are pregnant, who recently had a child, or who are taking contraceptives, or who are undergoing hormone replacement therapy, they're vulnerable as well. And then generally across the board, people 40 years and older may also be at increased risk. Approximately 4-5% of high-risk individuals may suffer DVT on flights of 10 hours or more. Some of the symptoms are swelling, tenderness, discoloration, or redness in the lower leg may be signs of DVT. Unfortunately, however, there are no symptoms at all. So you're not going to cough, you're not going to get a headache, you're not going to get these things. They're the things you more have to look for. All right, and if you're not paying attention and it just feels like your legs are falling asleep, on the flight anyway, then swelling and tenderness and discoloration or redness in the lower legs are things that you may not even be necessarily aware of. So what precautions can you take? At the American Heart Association Scientific Sessions in 2001, the result of research conducted by an international group of scientists from the UK, Australia, and Italy suggested that low to medium risk patients may prevent DVT with compression stockings, while a single dose of heparin, which is a blood thinner, may work for high risk individuals. Consult your physician if you are concerned about DVT and to discuss how to best reduce your risk. In addition, these are some helpful hints. Walk around the cabin every 15 to 30 minutes, if possible, during flights of 3 hours or longer. Do some simple stretching exercises while seated. Sleep for only short periods, up to 30 minutes at a time. Limit alcohol and caffeine, which may contribute, it will contribute to your dehydration. Bring your own water bottle or request water if your flight has a beverage service. And walk briskly through the airport during layovers. And then some in-flight exercises, things you can actually do. Just simply lift your feet off the floor. Move your toes in a circle, one foot moving clockwise, the other moving counterclockwise. Just keep changing directions and rinse and repeat. Foot lifts, just place your heels on the floor and bring your toes up as high as you can, then put both feet back flat on the floor, then pull your heels up while keeping the balls of your feet on the floor. Knee lifts, while keeping your knee bent, raise your leg while tensing your thigh muscle. Repeat 20 to 30 times alternating legs. And remember, this is if you can't get up. You know, if there's a lot of turbulence and the captain's not allowing people to get up and walk around, then these are things you can do in your seat. Otherwise, it's very much preferred to actually get out and walk around. Shoulder rolls. Just raise your shoulders and then move them forward, downward, and then backward in a smooth and circular motion. Arm bends. Just start with your elbows on the armrests and your hands pointed forward so that your lower and upper arms make a 90-degree angle. And just take turns moving your left and then your right hand toward your chest, back and continue for about 30 seconds. Just bring your knee to your chest, forward bends, which means basically place both feet on the floor and pull in your abdomen, bend slowly forward and walk your fingers along your shins to your ankles and hold for 15 seconds and then sit up slowly. So there's a whole bunch of things you can be doing, because people who are also at risk for this are just people who are bigger. I mean, I'm 6'2". You know, so if you're larger and you don't exercise, then you're in one of the more susceptible categories. All right, so it's just real important. Again, what does this come down to, ladies and gentlemen? It's what we talk about all the time. You just got to move. The body has to move. So, again, absolutely preferred if you're flying just to get up from your seat, walk around the cabin, go to the bathroom, do whatever you have to do, but just make sure you get some circulation in there. And the same goes for car rides as well. Now, if you're going to be driving, I mean, I've done this, I don't recommend it, but, you know, I don't know if I'd do it now, but doing marathon rides of like 6 to 10 hours without taking a break, not necessarily such a good idea. And the good thing about driving is you can get out of the car, and certainly when you get gas, you can do squats, you can do lunges. What I used to do is I had to take little laps around the gas station. So the whole idea here is you just, if you don't get it moving, again, this is about the inner veins, and this is about those veins clotting, and the blood clots form in the real deep veins of the body, and then they could travel. And if they get up to the lungs, then it's essentially game over. So just keep that in mind. And another note about airplanes is they're absolutely dirty. You get a lot of recycled air just circulating around and around. They're essentially like a petri dish. You know, there's just really no break there. So it's not like you can open the window and get fresh air, obviously. So really important. They have a lot of great products out there nutritionally that you could take when you're flying that will help stimulate your immune system, because when you're breathing in recirculated air, it's, you know, God knows what kind of bacteria is floating around in there. So if you're taking, let's say, higher amounts of vitamin C when you're on the airplane, a friend of mine gave me a product called Airborne, I think it was called, and it's just a really high-intensity multivitamin, multimineral concoction that was just very immune-stimulating. You just mix it with water. Those emergency packs are really good. You can mix those with water. So there's a lot of different things you could do and you could take, but I highly recommend, you know, what I also do is I take a squirt, like silver, that I can actually squirt in my mouth, because your mouth just becomes this breeding ground of bacteria from all the stale air. And silver has very strong antiviral, antibacterial components to it. So it doesn't have to be silver. It could be any other brand out there or any other concoction that will actually clean your mouth. You just sort of spray in an aerosol kind of way into your mouth, and that would be healthy too. So just keep that in mind. I mean, you're really high up in the air. You're not moving around a whole lot. The height and the low cabin pressure equally combine to dehydrate you. On top of that, if you're taking alcohol, which I see a lot of people do on flights, or coffee, then that's going to further dehydrate you. And if you don't have a very active lifestyle to begin with, then you know, then you're at higher risk for deep vein thrombosis. And so just make sure you're moving around the cabin, make sure you're pumping some mega supplements into you so you don't so your immune system doesn't take a hit being up there, and just keep yourself hydrated. You know, when you're flying, just really, really important to keep yourself hydrated. And that means taking your water on board. And sometimes they don't let you do that. I find, I don't know, just traveling, I find the rules change sometimes, or certain airports enforce them, other ones don't. But the point is, you really need to stay very, very, very well hydrated when you're up there in the air. So anyway, that had crossed my mind while I was traveling, and just wanted to share all that information with you guys, because, again, it does come down to movement. You got to move. And I think you'll appreciate this one, too. Studies show how exercise can improve your sex life. And this is also from the American Council on Exercise. It says, exercise is not only a well-documented means of maintaining muscle and losing fat. Recent studies propose that it can also revitalize your sex life. In a February of 1999 issue of the Journal of the American Medical Association, scientists found that sexual dysfunction is more likely among those with poor physical and emotional health and plays a major role with negative experiences in sexual relationships and with overall well-being. This is what we've talked about, right? I mean, the healthier you are, the leaner you are, the better you're going to feel about yourself, and this just carries on into your sex life. I mean, sex is exercise. I mean, maybe not for some people who, you know, get it over with pretty quick, but if you're having any kind of endurance and it goes on for a while, it, you know, you could burn a heck of a lot of calories having sex. It goes on to say, sexual function is affected by general health, and the more you can do to improve your health by taking good care of yourself, the better your sex life can be. Doctors at the New England Research Institute found that regular, vigorous exercise can be effective at lowering impotence risk. The researchers studied more than 600 middle-aged men who hadn't reported any problems with impotence. After 8 years, the men who exercised regularly were less likely to have problems. Vigorous exercise, the equivalent of walking 2 miles or burning 200 extra calories a day, was most effective. Alright? So walking a minimum of 2 miles or burning up to 200 calories a day, which could be burned doing other machines, that statistically, according to the study, was most effective. On the opposite coast, a University of California, San Diego study of 78 healthy but sedentary middle-aged men documented changes when the men were assigned to exercise 3 to 4 times a week for 1-hour sessions. Overall, the former couch potatoes reported more reliable sexual functioning, more frequent sexual activity and orgasms, and greater satisfaction. Yet another study conducted at the Harvard School of Public Health revealed that men who exercised vigorously for 20 to 30 minutes were about half as likely to have erection problems as inactive men. The scientists in this study also discovered that as a man gained weight, he became more susceptible to experiencing erectile dysfunction. All right, so let me read that again. As a man gained weight, he became more susceptible to experiencing erectile dysfunction. Women's sex lives can also benefit from regular exercise. Researchers at the University of Texas at Austin studied 35 women, ages 18 to 34. On two separate occasions, the women first watched a short travel film, followed by an abbreviated X-rated film. To begin with, the subjects cycled vigorously for 20 minutes. The second time, they didn't. Researchers calculated their sexual response using a device that measures blood flow and genital tissue and discovered that the women's vaginal responses were 169% greater after exercising. Shall I read that again? 169% greater. All right. The women's vaginal responses were 169% greater after exercising. So, such is more to love. Doctors believe that exercise has the effect it does on increasing sexual potency because it strengthens the cardiovascular system and improves circulation. Good circulation is important for sexual function. Other things that hamper circulation include obesity, smoking, heavy alcohol use. However, losing weight and quitting smoking or drinking alone did not improve sexual function the way that exercise did. If exercise can do so much for your sex life, shouldn't more even be better? The answer is actually no. According to the same doctors who did the studies, heavy exercisers can actually decrease testosterone levels, leading to a less robust sexual appetite. In addition, overtraining can compromise the immune system, which could also adversely affect sexual performance. Exercise, while not a panacea, may be just what the doctor ordered for physical and psychological complaints. Now, they didn't really define that, though, which is interesting, because they just said is more better, and they found people who, all they said is just did heavy exercise, and that actually decreased testosterone levels, but they don't define what heavy exercise is, and that's sort of a downplay, but I would just imagine it's the kind of frequent and intense exercise you would do that you would exhibit many, many different signs of overtraining. And we've talked about that. You get to a point where if you're overtraining, if you're going 7 days a week and you're not getting a whole lot of recovery, you're going to have just the opposite effects. You're no longer benefiting from exercise. You're actually wearing your body down. Because as hard as this may be for some people to believe, your rest and your recovery is actually 50%, if not more, of your total equation. Because it's great to train your body and to put it through the motions and to stress your muscles and to get your heart pumping and to go through all those cycles. But without adequate recovery, if the body's not having a chance to chill down and build back up, then all you're going to do is continue to break it down. And then you're in a real pickle at that point. It's sort of like a battery, right? I mean, people have camcorders. This happens frequently with camcorder batteries. You charge them up, and you're thinking to yourself, well, you know, I only used half, but I'm going out tomorrow, so I'm going to charge it up again. What eventually happens, if you don't let that battery drain completely and then recharge it, it does create a memory. And then the life on the battery is essentially going to lessen. And it's really not all that different with us. Okay, if you're overtraining and you're not allowing enough recovery, then your performance is going to drop. It's like the battery losing its shelf life. You're going to see changes in your heart, blood pressure, your resting heart rate. All those things that you necessarily want to go down are eventually going to start going up. And that is a surefire sign, absolutely surefire sign, that you are suffering from overtraining. And then you just simply need to step back a little bit. All right. So real, real important to make sure you're giving yourself enough recovery. Very, very important. And the last thing I'll mention here is how exercise not only helps avoid deep vein thrombosis and improves your sex life, but just wanted to discuss a little bit about exercise and hypertension, because this is what a lot of people are experiencing right now, especially because the fact that everybody's under so much stress because of what's going on and the economy, both domestically and foreign. So just a word on hypertension, because I think we're going to see hypertension rise. And remember, if you go get your blood pressure done, the average is 120 over 80. So you really want to be in that range. But if you do have hypertension, which nearly 50 million Americans do, they have a resting blood pressure that's high enough to endanger their health and longevity. And this is from the American Council on Exercise as well. This elevated pressure, termed hypertension, has been referred to as the silent killer because it is not recognized by a given set of symptoms or subjective feelings. As such, hypertension may even be greater as many individuals choose not to have regular physical exams and or blood pressure checks. The incidence is higher among African Americans, Mexican Americans, Puerto Ricans, Native Americans, and Cuban Americans, as well as individuals with lower educational and economic backgrounds. Defined as a chronically elevated blood pressure greater than 140 over 90, because remember what I told you, 120 over 80 is normal. So if you're 140 over 90, hypertension is diagnosed by taking a if you're 140 over 90, then you're borderline hypertension, then you're getting into the danger zone. And what those numbers basically mean is your top number is your systolic number, and your bottom number is your diastolic number. And basically all you're measuring is the contraction phase and the relaxation phase of the muscle. So if you were to do a bicep curl and with a dumbbell, and you bring your arm up to 90 degrees, your bicep is contracting. As you go down, it's relaxing. So muscles contract, and then they relax. They don't flex. I know a lot of people say, yeah, I'm going to flex, you know. But what actually flexes and extends is essentially the joint. It's not the muscle. The muscle contracts and then relaxes. So the heart being a muscle, which is essentially all it is you're just looking at the contraction phase, which is your top number, which would be 120, and then the relaxation phase, which is your bottom number, which is 80. And the higher that number, it just essentially means your heart has to work harder. So it means you're having something start to clog the pipes in there. It's a serious medical problem, and when left untreated, the risk of developing coronary artery disease and stroke increases by 3- and 7-fold, respectively. All right, so while the current research base is not strong enough to draw firm conclusions, studies published to date suggest that moderate intensity activity, 40-75% of the maximum oxygen intake, may be most effective in lowering blood pressure. The current intensity recommendation for hypertension individuals is to use low to moderate intensity exercise. But as we said on the show many times, the higher the intensity, the more bang you're getting for your buck. Regular physical activity has also been shown to be effective in reducing the relative risk of developing hypertension by 19-30%. So that's statistically significant, in my opinion. Similarly, a low cardiorespiratory fitness in middle age is associated with a 50% greater risk of developing hypertension. Results have been similar in both men and women. Prior to starting a new exercise program, individuals with known hypertension should obtain clearance from their primary care physician. Now, that's one of the things that when we test people, both where I work and when I work with people one-on-one as a trainer, that's a risk factor. So if you have hypertension, you technically have one risk factor. Now, if you have two or more risk factors, you need to go see a doctor before you start exercising. And unfortunately, age is considered a risk factor too. So if you're a male over 40, a female over 50, and you have hypertension, then you need to definitely see a doctor and get some clearance before you actually start exercising. All right. So prior to starting a new program, individuals with known hypertension should obtain clearance from their primary care physician. It's important to remember that the key to a successful exercise program is consistency over time. It's what I've told you. It's like investing your money. You know, it's not all or nothing. There's no quick fix. You just have to be consistent with it, and you have to be doing it for the long haul. Don't try to conquer the world the first time out. Be patient. Start slowly and gradually increase frequency and duration. During the planning phase, carefully consider what barriers might stand in the way of consistency. Got to look at what your schedule is like. Got to look at what your obligations are. Then develop strategies and accountabilities to assist in eliminating those barriers. And we talked about that before. Accountabilities, simply the buddy system, working with a trainer or somebody that you have to account to in order to continually and consistently exercise. Endurance activities such as walking, swimming, cycling, low-impact aerobics should be the core of the exercise program. Exercises that include an intense isometric component that can cause extreme and adverse fluctuations in blood pressure should be avoided. And what does isometric mean? It simply means you're putting tension on the muscle, but you're not bringing it through any range of motion. So picture, again, the bicep curl. Picture you're bringing your elbows up at 90 degrees and just holding it and squeezing it there without bringing it up any further or letting it down. That's isometric. Just leaning up against the wall is isometric. Squeezing your muscles sedentarily where you're standing is isometric. The other thing that you got to really be aware of, too, is when you're hypertensive, you don't want to be doing any overhead exercises. You don't want to be doing any shoulder presses or even lat pull downs at that point. Because anytime you tense your muscles, you're going to elevate your blood pressure. Anytime you go over your head with your hands and with weight, you're going to increase your blood pressure. That's why when you're running, you want to keep your hands very, very light. You don't want to squeeze a fist. Because the more you keep tension in the muscles, the higher your blood pressure is going to go. So ideally, hypertensive individuals should exercise 5 to 6 times a week, depending on their initial fitness level. However, improvement can be achieved with as little as 3 sessions per week. The total exercise duration should be in the range of 30 to 60 minutes per session. People with lower levels of fitness should start with shorter durations, 10 to 15 minutes, and gradually 5-minute increments every 2 to 4 weeks. And then you just simply increase to the 30 or 60 minute goal. So, for those of you who've been diagnosed with hypertension, I would look very carefully at, of course, reducing the sodium in your diet, of course, but just get out there and start exercising. Now, it's much better to do that than to take the medications that the doctors are going to put you on. I've seen hypertension reversed too many times to even count in the years that I've been a trainer. It's one of the things that turns around most quickly and most efficiently. But again, consistency is the key. And if you're using exercise as a vehicle to lower your blood pressure, then obviously you're going to benefit from all the other benefits that come from exercising, including improved oxygenation, clear-headedness, and all those other good things. All right? So we are coming up to the end of the program. I have a little more to say about hypertension, but we can go into that next time. I want to thank everybody for listening, and don't forget to visit us at innerathletetraining.com, innerathletetraining.com, and I could be contacted there. We could be contacted there. So if you have any questions, which several of you had already, just contact us. Just simply go to the contact part of the website. It doesn't have to be about anything we've discussed before. It could be about something we haven't discussed. Maybe you just have questions, as many people do, about your specific goals. You know, because sometimes people, we don't do call-ins here. We will eventually, but right now we're not. But a lot of people do call in and they have specific questions. You know, hey, I'm exercising 3 days a week and my heart rate's this. Should I increase my intensity by this much? And those kind of questions are fair game, too. So please feel free to contact us. Don't be bashful. And look forward to hearing from everybody. And I want everybody to be well and be healthy. And we'll see you next time on The Inner Athlete. Thanks for joining us.